Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, good evening, Browns fans, and welcome to the Gang of Three. My name is Barry McBride. I'm the publisher of the OBR. Here with me, Lane Atkins. How you doing, Lane?
Doing well.
Glad to hear it. We will be joined by Mr. Pete Smith in short order. He is going to get here a couple minutes late, but he will be here. Unlike a lot of these YouTube Browns shows, when it comes to rookie camp, one of the critical differences is that we're actually there. And if we're not actually there, we're talking to people who were, in Lane's case. And so, Lane, I want to hear a little bit about what you've been hearing about the rookie camp. Anything really sort of stand out and blow you away from, you know, what you saw and what you've heard about rookie camp?
Yeah, there's a little different vibe that's going on there, especially when it comes from the coaching staff to the players. Todd Monken has a habit, if it ain't right, it's not happening, and he'll start it, and he'll do it over and over again. And they had that happen a good half dozen times. But one of the things that really standing out about the rookie camp, not just the rookies that they selected, but in the undrafted free agents that they actually brought in and invitees, is that they really like the athleticism and the mental awareness that a lot of these guys have. It seems like they've done a real solid job in their research and evaluation process of targeting guys who get it and who are athletic. And that's one of the things that it's been going on over this process, is that you could see them progressing. And talking to people within the organization, they're quite happy with where they are right now. You're never satisfied because you always want more, but yeah, they're really intrigued by some of these guys and the direction that they're heading throughout these practice sessions.
You know, this time of year, it is always really easy. You know, these guys just came out, they worked in shirts and shorts, you know, against other rookies or undrafted free agents. You know, the veterans weren't there to torment them or anything along those lines. But it does feel different this year. You know, usually you're kind of upbeat after rookie minicamp because you've just seen guys who are, you know, reloading your roster, display their skills. But this year really seems different, doesn't it, Lane? You know, especially after last year's successful draft.
Well, what's happening is that as the roster develops and evolves, the amount of opportunities that are truly out there shrink for, like, say, 20 players down to 12 players, down to 8 players. And so what you're finding is that you're finding a better quality talent who fits more within the scheme that you're playing in, the direction that you're looking to go to. And that's something that's genuinely exciting, because the Browns roster is evolving. It is getting better. And by looking at the draft of a season ago, and then you look at the draft of this year, the potential that's there, and then just some of the names that are on this undrafted free agents that they brought in here, that there's a couple of these guys that may have an opportunity to make it here, like an Aiden Hutchinson did a year ago. You're just seeing growth and development. Mm-hmm. It's going to come down to what this coaching staff can do with them.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the first questions we get here is from chat username asking about any UDFA standing out as a possible 53-man roster player. What have you heard about the staff's reaction to the UDFAs?
Well, I can tell you this about one guy who wasn't he was an invitee, was Aaron Anderson, the wide receiver out of LSU, who in his draft class, when they first went to LSU, I don't know, maybe fourth or fifth, rated. They like him. He's squirrely. He's squiggly. He gets open. He finds space. He follows the assignment. He's a guy that has them intrigued right now. You know, and when you look at it, you got a T.J. Harden, a running back from SMU, who is intriguing if you're looking at the ranks of a third back, potentially a second back. It all depends. Tough guy, tough runner. Reasonably quick and has adequate speed. It's a guy that you may want to keep an eye on. Also, when you get down through this here, a guy who just popped up on film throughout his collegiate career, and he did it a couple times over the weekend, was wide receiver Cole Wilson out of Baylor. The guy just finds a way to get open and make some crazy acrobatic catches. Don't know if that's going to mean through the whole process, but interesting on its own. And they spent a lot of time talking and working with DeCarlos Nicholson from USC, the cornerback. You're just looking at a bunch of guys here that they're getting an opportunity. And this is where they get to show it.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Pete, welcome in. Good to have you join us. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Interested to hear your feedback on this particular question, having stood on the sidelines for a couple of days while the undrafted free agents and the rookies showed their capabilities. Any of the undrafted free agents really standing out to you? Lane mentioned a couple, but interested in your perspective.
Well, Anderson's interesting. He got a ton of balls thrown at him, and I don't know what the appeal is to Luke Fleurier to this particular group. I didn't really see him do much. So that might be an easy swap since Anderson wasn't actually signed. He was a tryout player. Whereas Logan Fano, at least right now, looks like he's competing against guys who are not on the roster currently to win that job, because on its face, you would say he's going against Tyreek Sapp, but Tyreek Sapp was utilized inside of the three so much that I don't know that he's necessarily in competition with him. So at least right now, Logan Fano has a really good track to make the roster, unless they bring in somebody else or something changes along those lines. Those are the two that have the most obvious path. DBs are a little bit tougher to sort of sort out. One of the tryout guys I thought got a lot of praise and made a couple of plays that I at least noticed was Malcolm Bell, the undrafted tryout player from Michigan State. That room is sort of a question, and Michael Coates was only there the one day, so I didn't really see him do a whole lot as one of those guys. They brought in a kid from Delaware and the giant USC corner who basically just followed Denzel Boston around all practice. But yeah, I think those are the two that jump out to me the fastest. I'm sure there's somebody else that may have a shot, but like with all this stuff, you know, Cole Wilson's interesting just by virtue of the fact that, you know, they didn't do any, some of the stuff that he's going to be really interesting in. One of the things Cole Wilson does is he returns kicks. Has been very good in 3 years between Baylor and Texas State at that. And in a lot of ways, he is Zachariah Branch, who was drafted in round three, but you got him as an undrafted free agent. Similar size, same weight, outstanding agility, tested really well, and obviously made the one catch, which the Browns media caught making diving down the sideline. So he had a couple interesting things there. I mean, the biggest challenge, obviously, is that the wide receiver depth chart is much more competitive than it was last year. So how likely are any of these guys to really make the rosters? Far more difficult than it was last year.
Yeah, one of the guys who was at camp, I believe, was he working out, Jalen Reagor?
He was there.
He was there. Did he make an impression at all? Did he look like a former first-round draft pick?
No. I mean, to the extent that, like, I recognized and saw his name and goes, hey, there's Jalen Reagor, but at no point did I sit there and go, hey, that's – wow, this is found money and the Browns are, you know – he didn't really stand out to me. He didn't do anything necessarily wrong. It's just I never at some point went, wow, who is that guy type deal. He was just sort of there.
You know, and interestingly, to go along with that, there wasn't anything through the discussions that I had about a lot of these guys over the last couple of days. Reagor was never mentioned.
Interesting. Because he, the reason I bring that up, Pete, is because he might have his greatest utility in the return game as well. That might be his, and they didn't practice punt returns or kickoff returns or anything like that over the 2 days that you watched, right?
No, only as far as like they did the shield and some of their stuff for punt and some of that stuff. But no, they never did anything along the lines of real kick return stuff. All of the stuff they did was in competition periods where they sort of stood out.
All right. Good stuff on the UDFAs. Let's transition to talking about some of the rookies. One of the rookies who really appears to have stood out is Emmanuel McNeil Warren, the second-round safety. He was getting rave reviews. Todd Monken said the sky's the limit for him, and he was stuffing a lot of runs near the line. Says he studied Delpit and Hickman since their college days. Lane, you know, sort of, would you expect a camp competition with Hickman, or will the three be on the field so much together that it might not really matter?
I believe we're going to see the three on the field as it is. I believe that from discussions, McNeil Warren is maybe a little bit more arrived than they anticipated when he got here. He does everything really well. He can play close to the line. He's excellent in coverage. His recognition is good. He's rangy, has the ability to man up inside. It's an interesting draft selection that they really wanted, and they were going to do just about anything they could to get him, and they're extremely pleased with the development that they see out of him once he's come in here for a rookie camp.
Yeah, same question to you, Pete, about McNeil Warren. Did he make an impression upon you as he appears to have made on the coaching staff?
Day two, he was great. He had a play where he punched the bunch and pushed Carson Ryan to the backfield and was able to force the run back inside, and he knew he did it right. Had a little fist pump. He was pumped about that. Had a break on the ball where he was able to come downhill, and it looked like what he has been accustomed to doing to Toledo, where he was able to knock away all the way from Joe Royer. Might have had a pick at one point, had another guy not cut in front and sort of deflected it. He stood out in terms of what he offers them. It seems like everything with Emmanuel McNeil Warren is determining, and the team has said this, what can he do and how much can we throw on his plate? Do they want to sort of limit to him to one particular role? Personally, I think he'd be really good as a robber, roving sort of middle guy who just finds a way to make plays on the ball, even though he's not really a true free safety. But that's the question is how do they want to utilize him? Do they want him and Delpit to sort of be the back two guys? Maybe Hickman play more of a slot role. Is he going to play in that nickel a little bit? Or are they going to get to a point where they feel great about all these guys and mix and match depending on the situation? That's really sort of what's left to be out there. And I think Emmanuel McNeil Warren in that safety position will tell us a lot more about the defense in general that Mike Rutenberg wants to run than anything else they've done. So of the guys that they brought in on defense, he was clearly obviously he was the highest picked, clearly the guy who stood out the most. I think he's done really well for himself early on. You know, how well is that going to translate? And obviously, you know, part of his appeal is going to be, how many times can he really get his hands on the ball? As far as the notion of him being defensive rookie of the year, I think that's insane. Not because he's not a good player, but Sonny Styles and Arvell Reese should just be crushing that thing because they are being put in situations where they're going to be asked to make a ton of plays for their teams. And Emmanuel McNeil Warren may be great, but it's all going to come down to opportunities. And I just don't know how many opportunities he's going to get.
All right. Looking at the rookie class lane, you know, I'm sort of thinking that McNeil Warren is going to make one of the quickest impacts of anybody on in that draft class, most notably because of the position that he plays. You know, the wide receivers, it's going to take a little while. The offensive lineman, it's going to take a little while to get communication going. I would expect McNeil Warren to stand out early if he's going to stand out at all.
Well, it's really going to depend on the role that they put him in. If they thrust him out there and when they're playing big, when they're playing three safeties, or if he plays more Harrison role, he's not a natural free safety, but he's showing the qualities that he has the ability. So really, it's really going to depend. And then let's not discount the wide receivers, because I truly believe Casey Concepcion is going to have a major role in this offense, and Todd Monken is going to move this guy all over the place. And he is going to be that dynamic, explosive playmaker type that this team has been lacking. It's really going to come down to, you know, how well the offense works in unison as this thing gets going. But this is a guy who's going to make noise.
Yeah, Pete, you know, transitioning to over to the wide receivers, I sort of had a note to myself that, you know, the expectations that we had last year, you know, formed by last year, where Schlessinger made such a big impact and Judkins made such a big impact, you know, right off the bat, maybe we should tamp those down a little bit, because wide receivers typically come into their own, you know, in the second year, not as much in the first year. But Lane doesn't think that's going to be the case with Concepcion. What are your thoughts?
Well, based on what Monken wants to do with him, if Concepcion does not have time to wait for year two. They are going to find every conceivable way to utilize him. He was featured quite a bit in practices. Obviously, he was the main guy there. But they are not hesitating to move him all over the place, get him the ball in a variety of ways already. And the talent's there. I mean, I agree with your initial thought that we need to be realistic about expectations. I mean, last year, Mason Graham was really good, even though it took him till basically the second half to really take off, but he was good right away. Carson Schlessinger was good right away. Quinshon Judkins, good right away. Harold Fannin, good right away. Like that, you know, if people come in with that expectation, they're probably going to be disappointed. Again, this comes down to opportunities, and I have no idea what they're going to get out of the quarterback position at this point. So Concepcion in Boston could be great at everything, and if the guy can't get him the ball in time, it may not matter. Having said that, I think it's probably more reasonable to expect one of the two to sort of have a bigger impact than the other, and I lean towards KC Concepcion, not only because of the role I think he's going to play, but just – you know, it's the difference between KC Concepcion could be fighting for wide receiver one or two versus Denzel Boston could be option four in the offense, because Jerry Jeudy is going to be one or two. And then Harold Fannin at worst is going to be like 2A, 2B type situation. Like, he's going to be a huge part of this. So Denzel Boston, from that standpoint, may do a whole lot of things well and just not be that big of a deal right now. Now, hopefully he's going to grow, and hopefully he impresses that much that it doesn't matter, and there's plenty of balls to go around and all that stuff. But again, that comes down to the quarterback.
Yeah, it certainly does. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, the instant star, instant media star in Cleveland always seems to be a quarterback where people are pinning some of their hopes. And in Cleveland the last couple of years, it has been day three quarterbacks who've gotten the massive media attention. While Taylen Green is not dominating the headlines quite as much as Shedeur Sanders did, he certainly is getting a lot of attention from the local media. I would say, you know, sounds like from Monken that he's making progress, but that Monken is particularly concerned with his release and his footwork. Green compared himself to Randall Cunningham, which is, you know, shooting big really early. But, you know, Lane, we've already got a whole bunch of quarterbacks in camp. That room is crowded. Do you see Green's reps sort of drying up a little bit once OTAs start and the veterans arrive?
Well, when you have 7,000 quarterbacks, you have none. You know, and that's really the position that this team sits in right now, because they just don't know what they have and who it's going to be or what it's going to be. But when we get down to Taylen Green specifically, his athleticism and size, and what I was described to me as that he's very sponge-like. He just absorbs what they tell him, and he works on what they want him to work on. And yes, there was questions about his footwork and there's his mechanics, and they were already working on that. And he showed a little bit of difference in day two than he did in day one. He's a unique talent, and he's going to be thrust into that room and have opportunities. But, you know, getting back to your question, once you get in the training camp, you will see reps start to diminish for some, especially guys at the end of that spectrum where he is going to be at least walking into camp. So yeah, he's going to lose reps, and he's going to get a lot of time and side work, you know, just like Shedeur Sanders did a year ago. He wasn't getting all these reps, and he was doing work on the side. And this is the kind of thing you're going to see with Green. He's going to get those same kind of opportunities to do that. Just going to be interesting to see how his development progress goes and what this coaching staff really thinks of him, because they like the athleticism and the things he can do with the ball and what he can bring. So it's going to be an interesting thing to really watch closely to see what they do with him through all these sessions.
Look, I mean, when he knows where he wants to go with the ball, it looks good. His arm strength to the sideline is outstanding. He can rip the ball. But in terms of his feet, in terms of his process, his arm and stuff like that, when it comes to reading it and going through his progressions and shifting to where he needs to go, and particularly on shorter throws, he's got a long motion and he's got a slow time to get there. So they are going to try to speed that up as much as possible. I put this through the lens of he was at rookie camp. He's supposed to be the guy. I thought he did pretty well in 7-on-7s. He didn't throw a pick that I'm aware of. I could have, but guys didn't catch the ball. But he also threw a couple, more than a handful of really well thrown balls right on target. Had a couple really nice balls to Joe Royer, where he feathered it right over the top. He's got more touch than I think people account for. He's going to lose some reps at some point unless he's just such a phenomenon that the Browns just go, screw it, we're going to roll with him. I don't think that's too likely. But he needs every bit of work he can get. And the thing is, from what I've seen, he has an attitude that's like all about it. He does not seem like a guy who's going to sit there and pout or complain or anything else. He just wants to get better and wants to get work. So I think he's looking forward to it. Seems really excited at the challenge of improving overall.
Given all the things that he needs to work on, and the speed of the game in the NFL and all that, I'm not going to ask you to put odds on whether Monken is going to be able to transform him into the quarterback that he envisions with the shorter windup and the better footwork and all that sort of things. But is it a manageable challenge, for someone like him who has, so much room to grow?
Yes. I mean, I don't think there's anything that can't be done. The only real question I have with Jalen Green is more along the lines of, there are people who want to try to compare him to Josh Allen, and I don't think people understand just how bad Josh Allen's mechanics were coming out of Wyoming. Like, his shoulders are all always askew and all these other things that, like, they took time to fix. Jalen Green isn't doing that much wrong in terms of how he throws the ball. So there are things that he can improve. Can he be consistent enough in terms of his accuracy? I think he can be okay. I think he can do well enough. Biggest thing for him really is just seeing what the defense is doing and processing it accordingly, because that is where he ran into problems. He needs to protect the football better. Obviously the fumbles, that just how he carries it is problematic. He needs to fix that. But if he learns to read what's going to be an endless amount of zone defense for him, and process what teams are doing and be able to recognize the traps that were able to get him in college, that's where he's going to make the most growth. If he just doesn't give the ball away, he's going to be infinitely more dangerous. I mean, he said it himself when I asked him about it, was like, he had 300 yards and 100 yards against Ole Miss. Arkansas scored more points against Ole Miss than any team in the country, and Ole Miss ended up college semifinal. But it was the mistakes at the end of the game that cost them. So if he can eliminate some of those mistakes, they lost six games by a combined 17 points, all one-score football games. So just from there, if he's a slight bit better in terms of his efficiency and terms of his decision-making, that's a whole lot of football games he could have won at the college level. Can he make that transformation at the NFL level? To be determined. But if he does, it's going to – obviously, there are more rungs for him to climb up. But if he can do it, like – he can say Randall Cunningham, I can't believe, I don't know if there's a reason behind it, but like the guy that jumps out to me, a fully formed Jalen Green, is Colin Kaepernick. And Colin Kaepernick at the peak of his powers is incredibly difficult to defend.
Lane, where do you see this thing going? And we've got four quarterbacks in here. Jalen Green is not a guy they're going to expose to waivers. They're not going to be able to slip him onto the practice squad, most likely. Seems like some difficult decisions are going to be made here unless this team keeps four quarterbacks on the roster all year. which would be a very, very difficult pill to swallow. How do you think this is going to play out?
Well, I think that's a question that will be answered towards the end of August when these guys are actually on the field and doing all the work and getting the reps, getting the time, getting the opportunity and experience for a guy like Talen Green to help develop some of the deficiency issues he has. I mean, his mechanical issues, they're not significant. They're not pronounced, but he has things to work on. And the mental capacity and the awareness and the recognition are going to be the things that are going to be potentially the stumbling block that's going to slow him. But when you look at this Browns quarterback room, you're looking at Deshaun Watson. You don't know what he can do, where he's at. You got Shedeur Sanders, who, you know, needed plenty of work, and hopefully that he comes through and did the things that they wanted him to do this offseason. We heard he has, but now we're talking about a new system, so things are going to change there. And you got Dylan Gabriel, the forgotten man, who has an opportunity to excel because he's experienced so many different systems, schemes, personalities, and everybody's going to knock his size, and that's a detriment that he has. But this quarterback room is wide open, and no, they don't want to subject Green, you know, to waiver, because if they waive him, somebody's going to take a chance on him at some point. But the only problem is that when you have all these quarterbacks that they have now four, can you really afford to keep these four guys when you have questions that surrounds every individual in your room, which significantly impacts your offense and your development process with all the talent that they brought in? So right now it's way too early to even venture a guess on where this thing is going to go, because we have absolutely no idea what the guy who's at the front of the pecking order right now is going to be able to do, other than what we think is going to happen with him.
I would recommend that somebody be good fast, because if not, you're going to hear a whole lot about Talen Green. It's not going to be rational. It's not going to make any sense. He's probably not going to be ready for it. Almost certainly not going to be ready for it. But if you know, you see a bunch of guys throwing a bunch of picks and the offense doesn't go anywhere, they're going to look at those guys and look at Talen Green's physical ability and go figure it out with that kid.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're going to hear it awful, awful quick this year, especially if Watson comes out or Shedeur comes out and does not light the league on fire, which is the probable outcome.
Well, you're already getting the usual Cleveland media, a couple of them in there that are pushing the Green narrative, which is, you know, really, it's really a horseshit, because, you know, let the kid get in here and do work and learn and develop some, instead of the undue pressure that's going to be on this kid. When you look at the quarterback room that, like we keep talking about, it's so questionable to start with. This young man who's coming in here, who just wants to be on the field, he wants to play, he wants to learn, it's just pressure is going to keep going that way, because I have a feeling that we're not going to see any of these other three quarterbacks just going out there and lighting this thing up, and there's going to be issue.
My pressure on Talen Green is just be good enough to be viable on the active 46. Because if they do that, I guarantee Todd Monken's going to use him for a whole lot of things, including short yardage and goal line, because he'd be stupid not to. And for right. All the people who hated Kevin Stefanski, he's going to do what Kevin Stefanski did with Quinshon Jenkins and some of these other things they've done in the past and take it up to several notches, because Talen Green, it can be 4th-and-3, and that kid's going to terrify the defense. It can be you want to, you know, instead of direct snap to Quinshon Jenkins, snap it to Talen Green and run a read, maybe, you know, have an RPO attached to it. That's going to scare the crap out of people. He's almost 230 pounds. He's incredibly fast. The line is really well suited to what he's going to want to do. I mean, that's the part I hope. Now, that's where I think it will get crazy, is what's going to happen is that will look very, very good when he suddenly, you know, at some point it's 4th-and-2 and Talen Green takes it 40 yards for a touchdown because he's that athletic. And then all of a sudden people are going to be like, why are we wasting our time with only special packages? Let's just use him more than that. But so that is my desperate hope, that somebody, preferably Shedeur or Dylan Gabriel, is competent enough to sort of quiet some of those things, and that Talen Green, my pressure to be on the active 46 becomes an enhancing element as opposed to this thing that everybody's going to look at and go, why don't we do that all the time?
Yeah, I can just see it coming. I can just see it coming. But very interesting player. Going to follow his progress very closely on the OBR in the weeks and months to come. We'll see once we get into training camp if he starts showing up in some of these goal line situations or whatever.
That in the preseason. I mean, at some point, Jalen Green's going to rip off like a 60-yard run, and people are not going to be able to handle it because he ran like that's the thing. The Jalen Green has so many things he has to fix, but just the force of nature that he is difficult to ignore. It's 50-yard runs against LSU, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. Like these are teams with a whole lot of future pros on them, and he still can make them look trifling at points. I mean, that's just he's that much of a force, that much of a freak of nature in terms of just what he can offer, and you got him in round six.
You know, it's really as simple as this. Let's just get right to it. If he can show any type of progressional aptitude, they will do whatever they can to maximize his raw athleticism that he possesses to their benefit and to his benefit, and which will benefit this offense, who at times was stagnant a year ago. The last thing that they're going to worry about is getting him out there to do just the athletic things that he's capable of. He makes this team if he shows the progressional aptitude that it needs to be to make it. So it's going to be an interesting 2.5-3 months with the work he's going to do, because there is no doubt that he is going to put the work in, and they're giving it to him.
All right. Going to be very interesting. Hey, I want to shift gears just a little bit to go to a conversation which is happening in the forums or was going on a little bit earlier. It was started by Phyllis Not a Bot, and he says, maybe I'm in the minority, but I think the future of the backfield is Judkins and Sanders, Rocket Sanders. Samson just doesn't seem to me to be a successful AFC North running back in any role and in any offense. And that runs counter, I think, Pete, to your thoughts on that particular matter.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. I will buy all of your Dylan Samson stock. I will take all of it. He ran for 1,600 yards and 22 touchdowns at Tennessee when they had no receivers or a quarterback. He was the whole thing. He was 20 years old. He dominated. People get too caught up in this notion of, well, he's small. I don't care. Like, we're watching a whole bunch of receivers get drafted. He's got 20 pounds on. Put him out in space, throw him the ball. You saw him do it against the Raiders. If the Browns block to any – like, if the Browns line is better than it was last year, both in just what they're able to do push-wise, but also the way they're going to play, I could not be more excited for both Samson and Judkins and all of them. Like, all those guys. I am really, really interested to see what this offense is going to look like when you are in a world where – you've got Concepcion, Boston, Fannin, and Judy all on the field at the same time, and Dylan Sampson's just hanging out, getting a check down with all kinds of space, and he runs it for 20 yards. And we saw him do this, not against the Raiders, against the Tennessee Titans. And he was a huge part of their comeback when they had a chance to come back from two touchdowns down. Like, as I said, give me all your Dylan Sampson stock. The idea that he's too small is just – insane. And if the AFC North, if you can't hang the AFC North, are the other seven divisions somehow different? Like, how did we get such a hard ass division? I can't stop watching the Pittsburgh Steelers get trampled in the playoffs. Their tough run defense and all this other crap. They don't play the Browns, so the Browns defense doesn't play itself, so they don't have to worry about that. Yeah, Dexter Lawrence is a pretty good player, but everything else has been a big question mark. The Bengals certainly weren't a great defense the past couple of years. So that this notion of that is nonsense. Like, for a long time, all I heard was like, well, he survived the SEC. Of course he's going to be great. He was awesome in the SEC. He was the offensive player of the year at 20 years old. Like, absolutely crazy. I think Dylan Sampson's going to be a stud. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I don't know what the hell the Seattle Seahawks were doing taking Jadarian Price in the first round. Dylan Sampson would have been running back 2 for me in this class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that more than one place. Lane, you know, it seemed to me like Rocket Sanders came in here and made more of an impression, and Sampson maybe didn't. You know, in the minds of observers, do you think that's just a matter of expectations, you know, a draft pick versus a guy signed off the street? Or is it just more a matter that Samson needs the line to develop a hole for him? They have some room to scoot through, whereas Sanders can just run people over.
Well, when you look at the situation, you have to consider what the offensive line and what the Cleveland Browns offense did in general a season ago. And Dylan Samson is a guy who needs a little bit of room. He needs just the smallest amount of room to take the thing to the house. He's tough. He's quick. Hits the hole. But you can look and see what they did with Quinshon Judkins. And what was the average before a Cleveland Brown running back was hit?
Yeah,
a season ago.
88% of Judkins' yards were after contact. That's ridiculous. It is in college, Judkins, it was 63%.
So when you look at Dylan Samson, you're looking at a guy who demonstrated at the collegiate level. He could run the football. He could rush. He was effective. Dynamic ability as a pass receiver, which we talked on this show 2.5 months ago, that was going to be a role that was going to be more incorporated into him. Now, with this offensive line and the whole, this whole thing has changed, and you're going to see some variance of zone and some power, you're going to see this running team have an opportunity, a much better opportunity, if they stay healthy and they gel together, than they did a season ago, which was poor. So anybody, the question what Dylan Samson can do, you need to look at what he did before he got here, because Quinshon Judkins, everybody's excited about Quinshon, and they should be. And he was at 1.3 yards or something like that before he was hit in contact, and he still rushed the way he did. So you need to create holes. You need to create seams. You need opportunity. And I think Dylan Samson is a guy who can flourish in that. I'm not saying he's going to be a 1,000-yard rusher and 700-yard receiver, but a guy who's going to be a nice change of pace. And as far as Sanders is concerned, he did what they brought him in to do. They needed depth. They needed a running back who they felt they could rely on, who could bring. And also, they brought him in because he had a little bit more size because of the inefficiency and inabilities that they had up front with this team. You know, that's why you don't see a Jerome Ford and his role was reduced, and then he's gone. This is the kind of thing that they did a season ago to help them progress to where they are today. And interestingly, this guy is still involved in the mix, and it's going to be, you have to see what happens with this team once we get into camp and the pads go on and things start happening and things start gelling. Because right now, when guys are playing, running around in shells and shorts, you don't know anything. You can just see raw athleticism.
Yeah, very true.
The other part is beyond the offensive line, which should be hopefully will be better, but has to prove it. They've got more threats on the field, so the defense has to be more responsive to what's being on the field. Quinshon Judkins, of the running backs who had at least 100 carries last year, faced the third most defenders in the box at almost nearly 8. It's ridiculous. So if they get decent quarterback play, they can take advantage of the fact that they've got matchups and guys who can get open on the outside. It's going to create space. I don't know that Quinshon Judkins ever saw a light box or a six-man box. He would feast on that. But the idea that, like, I guess anyone who thinks Dylan Samson can't do it must have hated Eric Metcalf and hated Bill Belichick and still lives in this notion of Metcalf up the middle. And then he goes to the Atlanta Falcons and catches 100 balls because they realize, holy crap, this guy's really athletic. We can put him in space. Like, Dylan Samson, yes, he can run up the middle and do all these things, but they should be utilizing him in a variety of ways and be a viable option. You need to understand, I don't care that he ever pass blocks. Like, that's if you want to chip or release, fine. I'm not asking him to pass block at 5'8", 200 pounds. I'm asking him to catch the ball and be a threat, because if he's a threat, then teams have to account for him. And if he's, you know, if you can get the ball in matchups, if he's able to beat theoretically 11 SEC defenders, he could beat 2 guys in the NFL, which is what happened when he finally got some space against the Raiders and the Titans. So
let's clear this little thing up right now. We're not talking about any running back that gets a hole can be successful in the NFL. That's horseshit to start with, because there's been plenty of running backs that couldn't run through a trailer wide hole. Okay. Dylan Samson is a guy that they just want to get his versatility and utilize that to be a threat with everything else that's on the field, just like Pete alluded to. This is what his role is. This is what they need him to be. They need him to be a change of pace. We're not talking about anything else that trying to make a big story out of this. The same thing with Jerome Ford. You want to talk about Jerome Ford could play pass block. He was marginal. Much faster 40? Not really. 15 pounds heavier? Might have showed. But he wasn't very good as a running back in the system and in the scheme and the expectation. There's a reason why they went out and got guys that they did. So let's be realistic and you know, want to be argumentative. Okay, be argumentative. We can do this all night. The thing is that you have specific players that they're now scheming around and adding talent to it to make them a universe-wide dynamic. And that's the whole plan, and that's what they're doing.
All right. Well, Pete, Phil is sticking to his guns. We'll, you know, see how things go. He
applied his eye test, which is infallible and never wrong.
We'll see how it goes over the course of the season. I tell you, just me personally, you got three running backs who just finished their first season. All the, you know, no matter how you stack them, I feel pretty good with that group. You know, as a whole, we're going to get a couple good years out of those guys, it seems to me. Interesting discussion. Thanks, guys, for your perspective. I tell you what, let's talk a little bit about our top draft pick, Spencer Fano. Pete, your picture was all over the place talking to the Fano brothers, Logan and Spencer. Can you tell us, you know, sort of what you talked about and, you know, how they're adjusting to the NFL?
Well, I mean, a friend of mine sent me some, I think it was Instagram thing of Fano's interests that included anime and Star Wars. So I chatted him up on that. He was all about it, him and his brother. As far as like, you know, if you didn't know Spencer Fano was theoretically switching back to left tackle, you would have had no idea. It looks easy. It looks effortless. I'm sure there's some goofiness for him in terms of it just has been a minute since he's done it, but it looked easy for him. His movement skills are outstanding. Obviously they don't have pads on, but just, I would include the Parker Brailsford as well as Austin Barber in terms of they are really fast off the line of scrimmage and they can move really well, really well. Look, again, it's rookie camp. Fano didn't give up anything in terms of pass reps. Moves really, really well, comfortable in doing all the things, has a great attitude, which this is one of the things I said before the Browns drafted him, which I think is proving to be true. People are going to love the kid. He's got an infectious attitude the Browns are all about and should be. He's just really excited to do everything he's doing. And, you know, and he looked the part. I mean, he physically stood out as he should in that field. We'll see what happens when the veterans show up. But like, you know, it's very clear how young, you know, you can tell he's a very young guy, but a ton of mass to him. I think he's going to be really impressive for what they want to do. I have no real concerns about him. And his arm reached all the way to mine when he needed to shake my hand. So I don't worry about that either in any of that stuff. So I think he crushed it in terms of what they asked him to do in drills and stuff. The thing that has just jumped out to me from everything is he just moves different from other guys. It's effortless. He runs like a skill player as opposed to a lineman.
Interesting, Lane. When you know we heard via a TV special that the Cleveland Browns were looking at three players at that position: Maui Noah, Tyson, and Spencer Fano. Do you think that the result would have been the same with picking Fano if those two guys were still on the board, or is it impossible to tell?
It's impossible to tell because you're not going to get a definitive answer. You will get generalized in saying that Spencer Fano is the guy that they really liked and were really comfortable to take him if they had to at 6 compared to 9. They also wanted like the wide receiver who provided a dynamic. I personally believe from discussions that this was a decision that was going to be up in the air to the end, and Spencer Fano and Tyson were going to be two guys that were directly in the mix. I think that they got the guy that they truly wanted, and that they truly needed.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, from my perspective, they passed on Tyson in his, you know, injury history,
which is already a thing. Already a thing in the NFL.
It is.
Like, I have a hard time thinking that Todd Monken was going to be able to deal with that. I could be wrong. Maybe it wouldn't have been an issue, but because he talked about trying to slow play it and being smart with Casey Concepcion. I mean, obviously he practiced and everything, but they did a couple things to like check in on him and early in reps, but then he went out there and competed. I just have a difficult time seeing Todd Monken have a ton of patience with, hey, we just drafted this guy with the sixth, eighth, or whatever pick, seventh in this case, or with the Saints, or eighth. And then, by the way, you don't get to use him on this day, and this day, because we're worried about trying to ease his way in. Like, it would just – maybe I'm wrong, but I just think it would drive a guy like Todd Monken crazy that you're, like, telling him a 22-year-old kid can't get on the field and work, and that we've got to slow play him, and he's only going to have him certain days. It just does not seem like something he would be able to deal with, as opposed to Spencer Fando, where you're like, go nuts.
Yeah. It just it makes sense to me that they went with Fano because of, you know, Tyson's injury history, plus the fact they were able to land two really good receivers, you know, before day two was out. The need at receiver might not have been, you know, at that point as great as it was perceived to be. And then as far as Maui Noah is concerned, they've assigned a couple of guys to play offensive guard, unless you think Maui Noah can – you know, go out to left tackle where there is a giant void. Fano's is just a logical pick.
I can tell you through my discussions that it was Spencer Fano. I heard more about him than anybody. And over the last, I don't know, 8 weeks, we've talked extensively about Spencer Fano over and over and over again. There was a reason why. Pete loved him. I love him. I think he's has an opportunity to be exceptional, but that's a guy that we kept hearing about. Tyson was some, Tate was some, Maluga. Yeah. I never got anything making me feel like that was the guy that if he was sitting there, they were going to take. I've never got anything like that. So, you know,
I think
where it is.
For what it's worth, I think a lot of the speculation is coming off the fact that when the Saints took Tyson, Jimmy Haslam immediately, when the Browns were then going to be on the clock again, immediately said, well, it's a tackle. Well, here's the thing. There were only two choices at that point. Like, it was either going to be receiver or tackle. The fact that they picked receiver just made it so it was either tackle or tackle. So him saying that was natural, it doesn't mean that, like, it's possible they could have taken Jordan Tyson. I would have rioted if they had done it for all the reasons I'm going into, and there's any number of more data points that are very terrifying with him. But nevertheless, it doesn't – automatically mean that by virtue of Jimmy Haslam saying that means that they were going to then take the receiver. I think at that point they would have sort of done a small discussion and then come to whatever conclusion they were. Maybe they would have had, you know, obviously they had the one scout do his thing because that was his orange dot player. Maybe there's another guy who had an orange dot in Tyson. Maybe they would have listened to him before ultimately making a decision. I would not have been surprised in the least if they just would have still said Fano. I think that most likely would have happened. But only no way to know for sure.
Yeah, you know, when DeJuan Jones is your next available opportunity, I think it creates a need in that department, but that's just me. Let's talk a little bit more about the offensive line. We have Parker Brailsford. You said he looked really good in rookie minicamp, you know, running against fellow rookies and UDFAs. But, you know, we're now starting to hear a view that we had expressed a while back that he might have a legitimate chance to start. I guess the question I have is that the Browns signed a couple of offensive linemen, a couple of offensive guards, and wouldn't it be difficult, or let's put it this way, wouldn't it be hard to explain if Jenkins replaced one of those two because Brailsford won the center job, Lane?
Well, all along throughout this process, when they sign these guys in free agency is that they didn't have specifics lined up for them. It's been known, or quietly known, stated that they would have absolutely no problem with Junkins at left guard, and I think that may be the best thing because I think he's a better guard than he is a center to start with. We entered the draft knowing that the Browns were going to look at interior offensive linemen, so that should tell you what they thought about the position where they were in. If they needed a guard, they could have Jenkins at center. If they could land themselves a center that they felt could be starting quality, then you have the opportunity to add the experience Jenkins over at left guard, which I think in the end of this whole situation is going to be what we end up seeing. I think that Brailsford is going to be the center. He's done nothing but achieved, and they're really impressed with him. And I believe that he is going to get a little bigger. I don't think he's going to play at 289 over the long run. But he has physical tools that they like. He has athleticism. He has uncanny strength for his size. And he knows how to use leverage, and he knows how to move. He runs well in space. This is a guy that when he was selected, we discussed it almost immediately that this guy's going to have an opportunity to start at center just due to the situation in Cleveland. And I think, if anything, through a couple weeks after the draft and some rookie camps and getting him in here and seeing what he's really about, besides listening to coaches and evaluations, I think that they really like this young man, and I think he has the opportunity to make a mark here.
Well, I think Fano and Zion Johnson are going to be the left side because those two are athletically perfect for each other in making a really athletic left side. So I think it's a question of center and right guard. Todd Monken has made no secret of the fact he'd really like Elgton Jenkins to play guard. Perhaps too much so, and probably Andrew Berry wasn't thrilled at the amount of times he said that he'd like Elgton Jenkins to play right guard because it sort of gave the game away a little bit. Having said that, Todd Monken's smart enough to know he's not to fall in love with a guy in shorts. So coming out of minicamp, his response was basically that Elgton Jenkins is going to have to play center and right guard until they figure this thing out. Obviously, their dream scenario is that Parker Brailsford is good enough to step in and start. Even better would be allowing them to be in a situation where Brailsford and Whipler can be your two centers, and then have Elgton Jenkins be your right guard, Tevin Jenkins be your right guard, KT Levinson, some sort of, whatever that's going to work itself out to be. That clearly is what Monken would prefer. But he's smart enough not to put the cart in front of the horse. He's not going to, make a decision before these guys get pads on. Obviously, Parker Brailsford has to prove not only about the physicality element, which I was impressed with what he was able to put on tape against a guy like Daryl Jackson from Florida State. But he also has to prove the mental stuff. Can he take control of the line of scrimmage? Can he run the show up front? Can he handle all the protections? Can he put these guys in the right spot? All indications are that Brailsford has excelled in that area, but he still has to do it. Elgton Jenkins has to prove he can do it too, relative to this, but he has done it in the past. So those are two elements that need to get sorted out. Frustration, maybe slight disappointment in my dream of getting a guy like Keelan Rutledge or Chase Bisantis is that we would have come out of the draft knowing right now, left tackle to right tackle, and it would just been a matter of getting comfortable. As it stands, I'm pretty sure I knew who left tackle, left guard, and right tackle are going to be. Center and right guard have to be sorted out, I'm sure they want to get it done as quickly as possible so they can try to get this unit to gel because, obviously they're bringing in all new pieces at that point. DeJuan Jones would have been the lone holdover, but now with Spencer Fano, it is all new pieces. So they've got a lot of work for Coach Warhop to sort of figure out, get these guys on the same page. So the faster they can make a decision about how good Brailsford can be as a rookie, if he's viable enough, if they need to put Elgton Jenkins at center and get these guys comfortable. Elgton Jenkins said it when he signed with the team, try to figure this out as soon as possible so we can get it going. That's going to be certainly important in terms of trying to get these guys going to get the best return to get the best impact coming out of the gate.
Lane, I'm interested in your perspective on the offensive line. Zion Johnson signing, the Tevin Jenkins signing, acquiring Howard. how confident are you that this line is significantly, I mean, dramatically improved over last year's difficult group?
Well, if you want to just look at player for player and what they achieved, you know, they resign Jenkins, they get his brother Jenkins, they bring Zion Johnson, they make the deal in Houston, they select a very versatile offensive lineman in the draft to start with, and they size a center, and then they draft another tackle. So when you compare, you know, apples to oranges, you would say that I believe that the only move that is right now that you can look at is maybe less than equal at a certain positional point would be Betonio's role.
Yeah.
I think you lose whoever plays left guard. And that could become questionable. Right now, they don't have roles specifically lined up and designated for everybody across the line. There's thoughts and opinions and what you're going to see when they start getting on the field. And then when they start getting into physically and seeing what people are going to do and see how things gel and see how the rookies come along. So to me, what they've done is addition by subtraction. Because they went and found guys that can play. They may not play at the highest level, but they're not playing at the lowest, poor level that we've seen a lot of this happening. And some of these guys who played a season ago now have the opportunity to compete and fight for death and gain experience and maybe change positions. So I think they're ahead of the game today. Let's see what they look like in the middle of August and towards the end of August, when you should really begin to see what these guys and what this unit is going to be and what it consists of. But I believe they're ahead of the ball game from a season ago right now.
They have a lower floor, because if they had to play a game right now, I'd take last year's unit over this year. But they have a significantly higher ceiling. As to Lane's point, where are they going to be, you know, late August? We shall see. Would not surprise me if it's clunky out of the gate. I hope not. I hope they're able to get it solved quicker. But I think so long as they're able to stay healthy, they get a couple games under their belt, I think you're going to see the improvement. I think it's going to be better. Zion Johnson obviously has to live up to the contract. He obviously got a big payday and has not played to that level to this point. They are sort of, as I said at the time, continue to say it's an aspirational contract. That is obviously a big step. So based on that, the number of proven linemen on this unit, if they were to play a game today, is two, and one of them is hurt. Titus Howard and Elton Jenkins. So everybody else is sort of an unknown relative to where they're going to be. Obviously, I have super high hopes for Spencer Fano, and I can't wait to see what he can do. If Zion Johnson can, if this is the better system, if this is a better coach, if this is a better a lot of things, he could take a major step forward, but he's not Joel Bitonio now. He may never be. But nevertheless, there's a significant amount of upside. And obviously, this group is substantially younger, so there's a little bit more staying power. That's going to be a critical component. But you know, obviously, I have major reservations about the quarterback position this year. But just in terms of how good this offense can be, I think so much of it is going to be how good and how fast this offensive line can get right.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. My intention is to keep my expectations down a little bit on the offensive line during the first couple of weeks of the season. At least, because it takes a while for them to be able to communicate well. But I think the general perspective out there is that things were so bad last year and we were replacing everybody. It's got to be an improvement. But I think you make a really good point about the floor and the ceiling of last year's unit and this year's unit. Tell you what, let's go to a question from DT Bulldog to finish things out. Lane, I'll start with you. Obviously, you talked to people behind the scenes, and there have been a lot of changes in the coaching staff from last year to this year. What are your early impressions about this group of coaches and the major differences between, you know, the approach that they bring versus the approach that we had last year?
Well, a lot of it comes down to there's just a different attitude. It's a freshness. This is where it's difficult to sit there and pinpoint things, because anytime you get an entirely new staff, everything changes. So all the dynamic has changed, and you're not going to have the same that this is what we're accustomed to in place. So as it generally works, anytime you add competent assistance to a head coach, players will tend to listen to that because, one, they're fighting for their job. They want to keep their job. They want an opportunity and all this. And the other thing in Cleveland is that you got a head coach now who is the opposite of the spectrum compared to Kevin Stefanski. He will just come out and say things that we're not accustomed to hearing. He has a different way that he deals with players. He's much more direct and straightforward with them. There's no doubt about that. I've been told about 7 different times that is something that's happening here. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be a head coach. It just means that all the internals that go within a locker room and a coaching staff and get on the practice field, there's just going to be those changes in how people feel. Do they feel less reserved? Do they feel that they have an opportunity now? This is the things that happen when you get a change in the coaching staff. And right now, it's the same thing. He's saying the right things. We're seeing the right things. But now when you get on the field and you start seeing everything start to evolve in the practices and everything, then you start getting a different feel for how the things are and how people are going to communicate and work. Right now, people are satisfied. They're happy. They like the opportunity. Let's see if this is the same thing that they're going to feel in 3-6 months once the war starts.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to evaluate the coaching staff, and obviously much of it on one side of the ball is the same. All I can say at this point is in the 3 practices I've been to, Todd Monken knows what he wants to accomplish in practice. He's efficient with his practices. They work. It seems like they work at a good tempo. Obviously, it's like the first day of school for a lot of these guys, so they're all motivated and ready to go, and they're not hitting and doing all this. You know, it's not the difficult part of it. But so far, the energy is good. We'll see if that holds up. Hopefully, it does. But, you know, I think Todd Monken, having had to wait this long, knows exactly what he wants to do, and he's going to try to do it. Whether or not the Browns have enough talent to accomplish it, specifically at the quarterback position, unclear. But we'll see where this team is in a couple months and see, you know, how this thing's going.
If they get good quarterback play, this team is going to be very interesting. If they get mediocre to poor quarterback play, it's going to be the same situation that we've seen. You might get flashes in the pan, and that's it. It's all going to come down to what happens at quarterback, because if they can't get anything out of that position, they're doomed from the get-go.
And that's the way it goes in the NFL. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time and insight over the last hour. Thanks, everybody in the chat room, for their comments and bringing up some topics for us to talk about. Much appreciated. A couple things. David Njoku, thanks for your work. Good luck in Los Angeles. Go Cavs. And if you're still watching this broadcast, please like and subscribe to the OBR YouTube channel. We really would appreciate it. Helps the show, helps us, and reminds you whenever we're going back on the air. That is it tonight for the Gang of 3. Thanks a bunch, everybody. We'll see you again next Monday. Good night.
Hello, and welcome to Pluto Phone. If you know the name of the movie you'd like to see, just stream it for free on Pluto TV, where all your blockbuster favorites are landing all summer long. Catch Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Fantastic!
The Matrix Trilogy.
Welcome to the real world.
Mean Girls.
Shut up!
Titanic.
I'm the king of the world!
And so much more. For showtimes, press nothing. They're free 24/7.
That is so fetch.
On Pluto TV. Stream now, pay never.